This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Chuck and Trout and Tom and Paula, Nico, Mado, Tyson, Chris, and Michael Schnee. Thanks everyone for being here. Today we'll get into some more of these really special teachings. Book 10, is Sakho. And Trout and I are gonna read these and we'll take turns and we'll see what you think when we're done here. So let me
say something before we begin. Is that okay?
Yeah, please.
Okay, first off, I just wanted to get a clarification. Nico, did you transcribe all of this onto these sheets of paper that we have?
No.
Somebody did, and there's a wonderful thing that happens in these sheets of paper, which you may have noticed, and that's that a lot of times when an E is supposed to come up, a C comes up. So instead of the word ears, we see cars. And sometimes when we're supposed to see eons, we see cons, as if we're being conned, which has just cracked me up a couple of times. The word eons came up and the words cons actually added to the understanding by flipping it around. And the same thing with cars. And then a couple of times the word R comes up and it turns into an arc. ARC. Yeah. And it's quite something to look through this and see the way that this happens. So I don't know how this got transcribed into this particular form. I somehow thought that Nico had done the whole thing. And I just wanted to say thank you so much, Nico. But whoever has the sense of humor to replace so many E's with C's, I just want to say thank you.
I would like to take some credit for that, but it was just an OCR job. Now that I've heard you describe it, yes, I did scan that and I gave it to Doug and he told me there was some bad recognition of the characters, but I didn't realize it was that extensive.
Well, it's done quite skillfully. I mean, that whenever there's a lot of times when an E comes up and it turns out to be a C. So it's just, that's just fun. So no problem. Uh-huh. And the second thing was I've been thinking about how to read this and how to listen to it myself. And I wanted to invite all of you that are listening, and good morning and thank you for being here. I wanted to invite you to come onto a river and to be floating in a river in a rubber raft by yourself. And there are no oars. And the raft is safe. And you're just flowing downstream. And sometimes there'll be rapids. Sometimes there'll be calm water. Sometimes you'll eddy out. And eddy is when a river goes down. And then on the right or the left-hand side, there's a circle and you get caught in that circle and then you come back out to the river. And since you're in a really safe rubber raft, you might bump into the shore a few times. And you know that you're okay bumping into the shore. And as you go down the river, you're going to get views of things. You're going to get a beautiful rock face And then as you change your angle, the rock face will become different. And then you'll go around a turn. And when you want to keep looking at the rock face, you can no longer see it again. And that's a lot what the experience of reading this is like, that oh, I want to stop there. Or, oh, look at that. Or, that's really stupid. Or, you know, someone wrote down cars when it should be ears. You know, I'll read the ears as much as I can. But I just want to encourage you, the listening of this is, how we listen is an instruction too. And I just want to encourage, invite people to do that as if they're in a raft. Let me just listen, see if anything else comes up. No, what comes up is just enormous gratitude for being part of this process. And Doug, thank you for giving us all this opportunity to be on these rivers. It's quite an experience. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So Doug's going to read the paragraphs and I'm going to read the poems.
Trout, I'm going to use the PDF version. So the arcs will disappear. And let me get to book 10. And I'll... Chris Colin was here briefly. He's in Austria. I hope he'll come back.
Uh-huh. And do you want me to read off the screen or do you want me to read off the piece of paper that I have?
Either one. I'm gonna move the screen too. Okay.
Okay. Well, I think I'll just try reading off. I may miss the cars and all that stuff, but I'll read off whatever you have there. And thank you for moving it then. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So, okay. So book 10, an enlightening being asks for clarification. And it's good to know that Manjushri is an enlightening being, as we talked a little bit about yesterday. Then the enlightening being Manjushri asked the enlightening being, chief of the awakened, since the nature of mind is one, what is the reason for seeing the existence of various differences, such as going to good or bad tendencies, having complete or imperfect faculties, differences in birth, beauty and ugliness, pain and pleasure, suffering and happiness? Why is it that activity doesn't know mind, mind doesn't know activity, reception doesn't know consequence, consequence doesn't know reception, mind doesn't know reception, reception doesn't know mind, cause doesn't know condition, and condition doesn't know cause, knowledge doesn't know object, object doesn't know knowledge. Chief of the Awakened answered in verse saying,
Benevolent One, you ask the meaning of this to awaken all the ignorant. I will answer according to the essence. Listen clearly, Benevolent One. Phenomena have no function and have no individual nature. Therefore, all of them do not know one another. Like the waters in a river, the rushing flow races past, each unaware of the others. So it is with all things. It is also like a mass of fire, blazing flames shoot up once, each not knowing the others. Phenomena are also thus. Also, like a continuous wind, fanning and drumming whatever it hits, each unaware of the other, so also are all things. Also, like the various levels of earth, each based on another, yet unaware of the others, thus are all phenomena. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, intellect, the faculties of sense. By these one always revolves, yet there is no one, nothing that revolves. The nature of things is fundamentally birthless, yet they appear to have birth. Herein, there is no revealer and nothing that's revealed. Ear, eye, nose, tongue, body, mind, intellect, the faculties of sense, all are void and essenceless. The deluded mind conceives them to exist. Seen as they truly are, all are without inherent nature. The eye of reality is not conceptual. This seeing is not false. Real or unreal, false or not false, mundane or transmundane, there's nothing but descriptions.
Then Manjushri asked, "Chief in riches of truth, since all sentient beings are not sentient beings, why does the Buddha appear in their midst for their sake and teach them according to the time, according to their lives, according to their species, according to their actions, according to their understandings, according to their philosophies, according to their inclinations, according to their expedience, according to their thoughts, according to their observations?" Chief and Riches answered him in verse,
"This is the realm of the learned who delight in ultimate peace. I will explain for you. Now please listen clearly. Analyze the body within. Who herein is the self? Who can understand this way will comprehend the existence or not of the self. This body is a temporary setup and has no place of abode. Who understands this body will have no attachment to it. Considering the body carefully, everything will be clearly seen. Knowing all the elements are unreal, one will not create mental fabrications. Based on whom does life arise? And based on whom does it disappear? Like a turning wheel of fire, its beginning and end can't be known. The wise can observe with insight the impermanence of all existence. All things are empty and selfless, forever apart from all signs. All consequences are born from actions, like dreams. They're not truly real. From moment to moment, they continually die away. The same as before and after. Of all things seen in the world, only mind is the host. By grasping forms according to interpretation, it becomes deluded, not true to reality. All philosophies in the world are mental fabrications. There has never been a single doctrine by which one could enter the true essence of things. By the power of perceiver and perceived, all kinds of things are born. They soon pass away, not staying, dying out instant to instant." Is the sound outside terribly distracting, or is it just kind of there? It's okay. Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
Then Manjushri asked, "Chief of the precious, all sentient beings equally have four gross physical elements, with no self and nothing pertaining to self. How come there is the experience of pain and pleasure, beauty and ugliness, internal and external goodness, little sensation and much sensation? Why do some experience consequences in the present and some in the future? And all this while there is no good or bad in the realm of reality?" chief of the precious, answered in verse.
According to what deeds are done, do their resulting consequences come to be? Yet the doer has no existence. This is Buddha's teaching. Like a clear mirror, according to what comes before it, reflecting forms, each different, so in the nature of actions. And like a skillful magician standing at a crossroads, causing many forms to appear, so is the nature of actions. Like a mechanical robot able to utter various sounds, neither self nor not self, so is the nature of actions. Like a, excuse me, I just had to change rooms and I've got to find out where I am. So I'm sorry. And like different species of birds, all emerging from eggs, yet their voice is not the same, so is the nature of actions. Just as in the womb, all organs are developed, their substance and features coming from nowhere, so is the nature of actions. Also, like being in hell, the various painful things all come from nowhere, so is the nature of actions. Also, like the sovereign king with seven supreme treasures, their provenance cannot be found, so is the nature of actions. And as when the various worlds are burnt by a great conflagration, this fire comes from nowhere, so does the nature of actions.
Then Manjushri asked, chief of the virtuous, since that which the Buddhas realize is but one truth, how is it that they expound countless teachings, manifest countless lands, edifying countless beings, speak in countless languages, appear in countless bodies, know countless minds, demonstrate countless mystic powers, are able to shake countless worlds, display countless extraordinary adornments, reveal boundless different realms of objects. Whereas in the essential nature of things, these different characteristics cannot be found at all. Chief of the virtuous answered in verse.
The meaning of what you ask is deep and hard to fathom. The wise are able to know it, always delighting in Buddha's virtues. Just as the nature of earth is one, while beings each live separately, and the earth has no thought of oneness or difference, so is the truth of all Buddhas. Just as the nature of fire is one, while able to burn all things, and the flames make no distinction, so is the truth of all Buddhas. Just as the ocean is one, with millions of different waves, yet the water is no different, so is the truth of all Buddhas. And as the nature of wind is one, while able to blow on all things, and wind has no thought of oneness or difference, so is the truth of all Buddhas. Also, like great thunderheads raining all over the earth, the raindrops make no distinction. So is the truth of all Buddhas. Just as the element earth, while one, can produce various sprouts, yet it is not that the earth is diverse, so is the truth of all Buddhas. Just as the sun without clouds, overcast, shines throughout the 10 directions, its light beams having no difference, so is the truth of all Buddhas. And just as the moon in the sky is seen by all in the world, yet the moon doesn't go to them, so is the truth of all Buddhas. Just as the king of the gods appears throughout the universe, yet his body has no change, so is the truth of all Buddhas.
Then Manjushri asked the enlightening being chief in vision, Buddhas as fields of blessings are one and the same to all. How is it that when sentient beings give alms to them, the resulting rewards are not the same? Various forms, various families, various faculties, various property, various masters, various followers, various official positions, various virtuous qualities, various kinds of knowledge. And yet the Buddhas are impartial toward them, not thinking of them as different. Chief in vision answered in verse.
Just as the earth is one yet produces sprouts according to the seeds, without partiality toward any of them, so is the Buddha's field of blessings. And just as water is uniform yet differs in shape according to the vessel, so is the Buddha's field of blessings. It differs only due to beings' minds. And just as a skilled magician can make people happy, so can the Buddha's field of blessings cause sentient beings' joy. As a king with wealth and knowledge can bring gladness to the masses, so can Buddha's field of blessing bring peace and happiness to all. Like a clear mirror reflecting images according to the forms, so from Buddha's field of blessings, rewards are obtained according to one's heart. Like a panacea which can cure all poisoning, so does Buddha's field of blessings annihilate all afflictions. And just as when the sun comes up, it illuminates the world, thus does Buddha's field of blessings clear away all darkness. Like the clear, full moon shining over the earth, so is Buddha's field of blessings equal in all places. Just as a great conflagration can burn up all things, so does Buddha's field of blessings burn up all fabrication. Just as a violent wind can cause the earth to tremble, so does Buddha's field of blessings move all living beings.
Then Manjushri asked, chief in effort, the Buddha's teaching is one, which all beings can see. Why don't they all immediately cut off all the bonds of afflictions and win emancipation? Furthermore, in their clusters of material form, clusters of sensation, conception, coordination, activity, and consciousness, the realms of desire, form, and formlessness, as well as ignorance and craving, they are no different. This is the Buddha's teaching. Why is it of benefit to some and not to others? Chief in effort answered in verse.
Listen well and clearly, and I will answer truly. Some are quickly free, and some can hardly escape. If one wishes to eliminate the countless faults and ills, one should work with diligence on the Buddha teaching. For example, a little bit of fire, moisture in the kindling will extinguish. So it is with those who are lazy about the Buddha teaching. Just as when you drill for fire and stop before the fire appears, the heat will immediately disappear. So it is with the indolent. When a man with a magnifying glass doesn't focus the sun's rays on anything, fire can never be obtained. So it is with the lazy. Like when the dazzling sun shines, a child shuts its eyes and complains, "Why can't I see?" So too are the lazy like this. Like a man lacking hands and feet, wanting to shoot all over the earth with arrows made of reeds, so too are the lazy ones. like using a single hair to take the ocean water, trying to drain the ocean. So also are the slothful. Like when the Eon fire flares, trying to put it out with a little water, so are those who are lazy about the Buddha's teaching. Like someone who sees space while sitting still, unmoving, and says he is traveling through it, so is the lazy one.
Then Manjushri asked, "Chief in doctrine, according to what the Buddha says, if any sentient beings accept and hold the true teaching, they can cut off all afflictions. Why then are there those who accept and hold the true teaching and yet do not cut off afflictions, who go along with anger and resentment, go along with jealousy and stinginess, go along with deception and flattery, compelled by the power of these things, having no will to detach from them? If they are able to accept and hold the true teaching, why then do they still produce afflictions in their mental actions?" Chief in doctrine answered in verse,
"Listen well and clearly to the true meaning of what you ask. It is not only by much learning that one can enter the Buddha's teaching. Like a man floating in water who dies of thirst, afraid of drowning, so are those who are learned who do not apply the teaching. Like a person skilled in medicine who can't cure his own disease, so are those who are learned but do not apply the teaching. Like someone counting others' treasures without half a coin of his own, so is the one who is learned who doesn't practice the teaching. Like one who's born in a royal palace, yet who freezes and starves, so are those who are learned but do not practice the teaching. Like a deaf musician who pleases others, not hearing himself, so is the one who is learned, who does not apply the teaching. Like a blind embroiderer who shows others but cannot see, so are those who are learned but do not practice the teaching. Like a ship's captain who dies at sea, so are those who are learned but do not apply the teaching. Like someone on a corner saying all kinds of fine things while having no real inner virtue, so are those who do not practice."
Then Manjushri asked, "Chief in knowledge, in the Buddha's teaching, knowledge is chief. So why do the Buddhas, in dealing with people, sometimes praise generosity, sometimes praise self-control, sometimes praise tolerance, sometimes praise effort, sometimes praise meditation, sometimes praise wisdom, or again, sometimes praise kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity? And yet all the while there is ultimately but one truth whereby to attain emancipation and realize complete perfect enlightenment." Chief in knowledge answered in verse,
"Son of Buddha, most rare is the ability to know beings' minds. As for what you ask, listen well and I'll explain. Of the past, future and present guides, none expounds just one method to become enlightened." Whoops, the pages here. Buddhas know beings' minds, their nature each different, according to what they need to be freed. Thus do the Buddhas teach. To the stingy, they praise giving. To the immoral, they praise ethics. To the angry, they praise tolerance. To the lazy, they praise effort. To those with scattered minds, they praise meditative concentration. To the ignorant, they praise wisdom. To the inhuman, they praise kindness and sympathy. To the malicious, compassion. To the troubled, they praise joy. To the devious, they praise equanimity, thus practicing step by step, one gradually fulfills all Buddha's teachings. It's like first setting up a foundation, then building the room, generosity and self-control, like this, are basis of enlightening beings' practices. Just like building a castle to protect all the people, so are tolerance and effort protecting enlightening beings. And just as a universal monarch can bestow all felicities, so can kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity give enlightening beings happiness.
Then Manjushri asked, "Chief in goodness, the Buddhas, the world-honored ones, attain emancipation by means of one path alone. Why then are the things in the Buddha lands we see now various and not the same? That is to say, the worlds, the realms of beings, the teaching and training, the lifespan and auras of light, the miracles, the congregations, the modes of teaching and doctrinal bases, each have differences, yet all include all the truths of the Buddhas, whereby complete perfect enlightenment is attained." Chief in goodness answered in verse,
"Manjushri, truth is always thus. The kings of truth have just one truth. People unhindered by anything, they leave birth and death by one road. All the Buddha bodies are just one reality body, one in mind, one in wisdom, the same in power and fearlessness. According to their dedications, when originally starting out for enlightenment, they developed such lands, congregations, and teachings. The adornments of all Buddha lands are totally complete. According to differences in beings' actions, they seem to be unalike. The Buddha lands and Buddha bodies, the congregations and explanations, such Buddhist teachings are these no sentient being can see. When their minds are purified and their vows fulfilled, such illuminated people then are able to see. According to beings' mental inclination and the force of the fruits of their deeds, there seems to them to be differences. This is due to Buddha's mystic powers. Buddha lands have no discrimination, no hatred, and no attachment. But according to Buddha's minds, they seem to have differences. Because of this, in the worlds, what is seen is different. This is not the fault of the enlightened sages. In all worlds, those who are fit to receive the teaching always see the hero of humanity. Such is the Buddha's teaching."
Then the enlightening being said to Manjushri, "Son of Buddha, we have each spoken of our understanding. We ask you, benevolent one, to use your wonderful powers of elucidation to expound the realm of the enlightened. What is the sphere of the Buddhas? What are the causal bases of the spheres of the Buddhas? What are the methods of liberation in the sphere of the Buddhas? What are the entries into the state of the Buddhas? What is the wisdom in the realm of the Buddhas? What are the laws of the realm of the Buddhas? What are the explanations of the states of the Buddhas? What is the knowledge of the sphere of the Buddhas? What is the realization of the realm of the Buddhas? What are the manifestations of the states of the Buddhas? What is the extent of the sphere of the Buddhas? Manjushri answered in verse.
The profound realm of the Buddhas is equal in extent to space. All beings enter it, yet really nothing's entered. The sublime causes of the Buddha's profound states could not be fully told in a billion eons of talk. According to beings' minds and wisdom, Buddhas lead them on and aid them. This is the realm of the Buddhas liberating beings this way. Able to enter all lands in the world, the body of knowledge is formless and cannot be seen. The Buddha's knowledge is free, unhindered in all times. This realm of wisdom is equanimous as space. Realms of being of the cosmos ultimately have no distinction. Thoroughly knowing all of them is the sphere of the enlightened ones. All languages and sounds there are in the worlds, Buddha's knowledge can comprehend without discrimination. Not perceptible to sense consciousness and not the sphere of mind, its nature fundamentally pure, Buddha's knowledge teaches living beings. Not action, not affliction, with no thing and no abode, no looking and no object, their realizations equanimous throughout the world. The mind of all sentient beings in the past, present, and future, the enlightened in one instant can thoroughly comprehend.
Then all the differences in state, activity, realm, body, faculties, birth, results of keeping precepts, results of breaking precepts, and in resulting lands of all sentient beings in the world, endurance, by the Buddha's spiritual power, all become clearly manifest. In the same way, all the various differences of all sentient beings in the infinite worlds throughout the space of the cosmos in all directions were all clearly revealed by the Buddha's mystic powers.
So let's just sit together for a couple of minutes. And I've had to change rooms because of the stuff outside, and I've got my dog making noise in this room. But in about a minute or two, I'll ring something like a bell or something. But let's just sit quietly with what we've heard for just a few minutes. So thank you all. I'm going to be talking this afternoon, but I would love to hear from any of you or from each of you what you noticed on this trip down the river, you know, what you bumped against or what beauty you saw or whatever came up for you as you were listening. I would just love to hear from people.
Two things came up for me. One was a sense of theater, how great theater this would make. And maybe we can think of a production sometime. And then what I bumped up against, the boulder in the middle of the river that I bumped against was lazy.
Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah, I was dozing off until that the passage on laziness, and that woke me up. Uh-huh. Spoke to me. Uh-huh. And I like the passage in which a Buddha teaches people, various people according to, he teaches them the opposite. I can't remember the exact words, but that spoke to me as well.
Go ahead, John. Were you going to say something, John?
Or Paula? Yeah, you're unsounded.
Okay. Well, I was. I'm afraid taking it quite literally. I thought, well, okay, I'm going to be on a river, and I turned away from the screen, and I had read the first parts, and I was on the Kern River in the really quiet part. I for a while I lived in the desert and would go up to the Kern River when I wasn't, when I was free on the weekends, and it was a park, and it was a beautiful green park after being in the dry tumbleweed. I really wanted to learn to kayak, So I decided to do it on my own, but I bought a kayak that was inflatable, and I got on in the park where, there were rapids, not bad ones, people could, that knew how to, really good swimmers could go there, and people with really knew how to kayak could go there. But I started at the calm place and just paddled up the river. And so I was in that calm place a long time. And then I thought of another river that I went kayaking, which I think was the Stanislaus River. I thought, oh yeah, I can do this. And Valen and I were traveling in the Sierras. So Valen drove me up to the starting point, which I knew it had a little rapids, really soon, just about 3 feet high, which I'd never been on. And he drove back, to where we were going to camp. And I tipped over on the first rapid, just plunk, and the water was freezing cold. So I don't know if cold is in here, but I was freezing cold. But then I got back in because that was a couple of decades ago. I got back in and just kept going. And, I loved watching the eddies. And I really like the rivers because you can tell where the current is, which way to steer. You can choose your current, kind of, And so I was just actually visualizing that river, but I guess we see the metaphor now.
And then I just kept, there was a place where then, I guess, in the Stanislaus River, it was a place where it kind of backed up. And so it was very tranquil. And I was having a, it was really nice, but I was having a really difficult time paddling. I just couldn't get anywhere. It's like I was stuck there. So it was really hard getting back to meet Balin, and he'd been worried about me. When I got right near the end, I noticed my kayak had must have a hole in it. It was almost completely deflated. And so I made it just, I just made it back. And it was, luckily I was in a calm space. After that, it was just in my mind, I ran into a problem because I realized I should be looking at the script, you know, so I could have something to say. But I because when I got to a certain place, I noticed that I was missing like 10 pages of the that I had printed out. So then I think I was just drifting along with your words and Doug's words.
I love listening to you in your journey down the Kern and the Stanislaus. Sounded like the difficulties that we all encounter in practicing. Oh, I'm going to really get my shit together here.
Yeah, right.
And I spent about 15 minutes this morning getting everything organized, and then this guy started drilling right outside the window. And then I came in here in my dog, and we can see when I'm going outside and stuff. And, you know, we think that we have our life organized, and we don't. So, and just hearing you in a Stanislaus, I can really just feel each piece of the, you know, a bunch of pieces of the sutra that we just read. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Real life share. And I'm very lazy. I don't think the two people, the guys that mentioned lazy, you're probably the least lazy people listening to this whole thing. because you're paying attention to the laziness. Those of us that aren't paying attention to the laziness that are probably need a little bit of a goosing. So thank you for the share about the laziness too.
Thank you for the river.
Okay, I'll give it a try now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I had to adjust my audio. That was delightful, Paul. I really loved hearing about your adventures on the water. I've had a significant amount of kayaking adventures myself, including on the Middle Fork of the Salmon River in Idaho, which is class 4 rapids, and we were paddling in inflatable kayaks and bounced off of many rocks, but then we had many wonderfully calm and flowing experiences, including through some very warm water. There were hot springs along the way, and it was quite the adventure. One of the things that I found in the reading here was I would term it echoes, as it were, of Dogen's teachings. And specifically, there were statements that phenomena have no function, therefore they do not know one another. There exists no one, no thing that resolves, nothing but descriptions. That reminds me of Dogen's referring to the and birds that fly but don't mind the air, the fish that swims but doesn't mind the water, has no concepts. It just is in their own worlds. They just are in their own worlds. And there are various other explications in this chapter of quite a few teachings that I found in Zen. So this experience is wonderful for me. It's really an opening experience. Thank you, Doug, for dragging me kicking and screaming into the teachings of this sutra. I was very skeptical at first, but I think it's really the verses that have captured me, and as well as sharing the experience with you all. So my thanks to everyone, and I look forward to more of this.
John, could I just ask you what you meant? Thank you to my dog for dragging me. Did I misunderstand? Ed?
No, I was thinking Doug.
Or Doug. Okay. I misunderstood part of the hearing of this thing. Thank you, Doug. I don't think of you as a dog. I just wanted to understand what you meant. I've got my dog under the table here chewing on a bone. So.
Doug is dog with a U.
That's it. That's
it. Got it. I accept.
You got it figured up. Yep. Thank you. Yeah. I just want to say one thing that grabbed me when I read this and then really grabbed me again. I mean, this is such a different text than the previous two ones in terms of the amount of stuff that you can identify with. You can stop and go, oh my gosh, that's really the essence of the Genjo Koan or something like that. There are pieces of it in the other one. But when I read this out loud and when I read it the first time, boy, did I think about the fires in California. I know all of you aren't in California, but I thought about paradise, the town of paradise and PG&E. And I mean, there's one thing about starting the fire as when the various worlds are burnt by a great conflagration, this fire comes from nowhere. And we're spending so much time in California right now, making sure that we don't have fires next year and that we had them this year. And that's the theoretical stuff, and we can talk about that. But I just felt this big, huge, overwhelming compassion of the people that have lost their lives and lost their homes and stuff in the fires. And he mentions in this sutra, fire comes up three times and flames come up. And I just wanted to say how that struck me really deep here. And those of us that live in Northern California, you know, we really have had this experience up the wazoo and Southern California too. Yes. Blessings. How about anybody else? I love hearing from you. It's a treasure for me.
Hello, everyone. I thought it was wonderful and a surprise to have this period of silence after reading this morning. It was profound for me to have, it was almost as if you just spoke about the fire coming from nowhere. After the reading was completed and we went into silence, it felt as if the teachings were coming from nowhere. That in the middle of our lives, these teachings appear in this incredible sutra. And then it stops. And we go into silence, and then it just seemed like the river was just flowing on. And I was not quite in it anymore, but yet that silence helped continue it in some form, that I could feel the river continuing to flow, but I wasn't quite being carried on by it. It had its own inertia. So it continued and kind of just went into thin air. So I really appreciated that space to taste the teaching and to experience what it was like when the teaching was completed. So thank you.
Thank you. I want to speak to that just for a moment. I think one of the, not I think, one of the most wonderful, impactful teachings that I got from Coben was the amount of time that he would often spend when someone asked him a question, just being quiet. And I'll speak this afternoon about some particular times, but one of the things that I learned was the difference between manufacturing an answer or just sitting there until whatever needs to be said comes up. And it's just such a different process. My wife and I each night before we eat dinner, hold hands for a bit and we share gratitudes. And I just love that the 1 minute of quiet before we share the gratitudes, because I don't, you know, before we do that, I don't think, well, what am I going to be grateful for? And when we do hold hands and are just quiet, then there's just this opening and these gratitudes come up. And sometimes they're for things that I really didn't notice that I noticed during the day or that I didn't expect. And sometimes they're a little teeny bit embarrassed. I mean, we've been doing it long enough that I get embarrassed, but I still am willing to say whatever comes up. But it's that listening that really is valuable for me, as valuable as any words. And I just want to thank Coben for exemplifying that so wonderfully. That it taught a lot of us just the value of just being quiet and listening. So thank you for talking about that. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Trout, in the section where, you know, the Buddhas talk to the stingy, the immoral, the angry, the lazy, the ignorant, the inhuman or inhumane, the malicious, troubled and devious, you know, to have all those retorts that are so generous, like to the devious, to praise equanimity. To the devious, you know, it just makes me mad. You know, you want to get to them. You want to figure out how to stop them. And that is not the way. The way is with this huge equanimity of, and so anyway, it really opens up possibilities of kinds of actions that are actually useful. Keeping it all diluted and mixed up. Anyway, in a way it's like there are all these secret teachings in here.
I want to share with you, Doug, I'm going to just say what you said, only using my hands, and watch. And I'm going to do it what you did with your hands just now. So it was like.
Doug, that was a passage I was trying to remember before. And oh, darn, I had it on my screen. Oh, never mind. But the first things that the Buddha taught were the six paramitas. I think if I could find that passage again, that I'm sorry. To the stingy, to the moral they praise ethics, to the angry they praise tolerance, to the lazy they praise effort, to those with scattered minds they praise meditative concentration, and to the ignorant they praise wisdom. I think that's the six paramitas, isn't that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. Thank you, Tom.
Well, I knew I liked it for some reason.
Just making sure that I'm not misunderstood, Doug. I just love the fact that you were talking about how things were closed like this, and then you just kept opening your arms up every time that you said something like that. And I just appreciated that along with your words so much, but I don't want anyone to misunderstand what I was communicating there. Yeah. Thank you. I took a course on personality disorders and different kinds of ways that scientifically we can get screwed up. And so we studied, for example, borderline disorder. And when we came into class, the teacher was just wonderful. Every week we would study a different kind of disorder. And when we came into class, she would say, okay, we're going to go around the room. There were 12 of us. And each one of us is going to say when we've been borderline. And so then we would come in the next week and we would have some other kind of a thing where we had, you know, we were looking at bipolar, and we would have to say, we'd have to go around the room and each one of us would have to say a time when we were manic. And when I hear all of those that, as you guys have said, really acute lists of things, and how can we bring compassion to those things to other people? I also feel like, how can we bring compassion to ourselves when we are like that ourselves? And to just notice that within ourselves. And sometimes we don't even do anything about it. We just feel angry. And we don't do anything about it, but to give compassion to ourselves and acknowledge, oh, I'm sitting here, I'm just sitting here being quiet, and I'm really angry, or I love Ram Dass, you know, telling that story of being sexually aroused all day. You know, he said it wasn't just one sitting, it was the entire day. And just noticing that thing about himself and noticing those things about ourselves. And that's working on self-compassion and self-acknowledgement. But that was a real learning for me in that process, and it continues here. And I agree with you, those are wonderful. It's a wonderful list of things we want to go out clobber somebody for being. At the same time, we may sometimes, I'll acknowledge I have been all of those things. And I probably will be tomorrow too. So yeah, that's quite a list though.
Chris. Were you going to say something, Chris? Would you unmute?
Oh, there. I stopped the video instead of the mute. Sorry about that. I was just saying that this last year, particularly the last 4 years, we've had this in our face every time we listen to the news. It example, our ability to react. We're just, I mean, I know I've been so charged by what goes on in the world right now. And to find that self-compassion is is really what's being called forward, to stand in our long, tall bodies with deep roots in the midst of what's going on, the injustice in the way the healthcare system works and the dialogue between supposed adults in, that are running the show out there. And that's all that outward illusion, but what happens internally is what we need to really, I need to really pay attention to. And so it's just been a huge year of transition and learning and trying to be present, not get lazy on it. You know, I really reacted to that bump in the river as well, that how you can become lazy and overwhelmed so easily and not find your resources. Anyway, thank you for this.
So, Doug, your comment about secret teachings, I have just a little bit of, you know, when I hear these things about secret teachings, I wonder about what they really mean. And I come back to the nature of these discussions over the week, the sharings, and what this is bringing forth. And it's you know, we were talking about the door bolt the other day. Mm-hmm. And it seems like this, you know, we found a key to something here, to that bolt. And stuff is emerging that maybe wasn't evident to us, or that we've forgotten about. But, you know, I'm wondering if that's what is the so-called key to the secret teachings, is this continual opening up, revealing.
It's all here, you know, the secret teachings are all here. And it's one teaching, and yet it's manifests in multiple ways. So it's, I don't know, it's, I get, maybe it's wrong to call them secret teachings, but in a way, some of this stuff is not commonly discussed. And so I appreciate all the evolved people that are here, partaking in this with us, because it's it's helpful.
You know what. What part of this reminds me of is again, I just gratitude for Coben when we were doing some koan study with him before ordination, and he stopped and said, and I know he said this a whole ton of times, he says that the number one koan is our own life, and that all the secret teachings are in our own life. Mm-hmm. And that's all, that's what we get to study. And like in the Genjo Koan, when it says the enlightening process goes on forever and ever, I'm getting old enough now that I really realize, oh man, this is not slowed down at all. it just goes on and on, so. Yeah.
I want to thank you, Paula, again for yesterday, and that we read those, that you read those prefaces or those paragraphs that were so expansive, and you know, all these Buddha worlds, all these Buddha realms, all these Buddhas upon Buddhas, trillions of Buddhas behind the Buddhas that are we see, and including on every atom. And as I move around Jokoji now, it's like everything I experience, it's like billions of Buddhas are coming at me, giving me messages, giving me information. Am I paying attention? Are we paying attention? So thank you for, I thought it was superfluous, and after having conversation with John, you know, he said, you know, this is out there. And I, you didn't quite say that, but it was, but it has an effect, a really wonderful effect that LSD didn't quite do that.
Yeah, I thank you, Doug, for reading that poetry. I pretty much knew that you would like reading that poetry. I think it's cool too that we have that expansive view, and really, you know, and then now, and we're introduced to, there are many enlightening beings, we're introduced to all that, and Manjushri is asking for clarification, herself asking for clarification here. So I hope Manjushri receives clarification. I feel like I got a kind of things are clear when we're talking. Things are clear when we're together and when we're sitting. Even though we aren't, maybe. I better stop now. But I really appreciate what you and Trout did today, or are doing today. And this was a great way to set up this issue. Well, it's hard for me to stop talking because I hardly have anyone to talk to except Valen. He just kind of goes, I'll stop now. Love you.
Doug, I you know, what's one of the wonderful things about this is the quality of your enthusiasm and your sense of wonder. And that you're, I just want to appreciate you for, first off, having us all do this. Oh my gosh. I mean, how many of us even knew that this sutra existed? I certainly did not. Mm-hmm. And then to do it in the way and choose the chapters that you've chosen. I looked at some other chapters and I went, whoa, he really chose the really good chapters. I mean, really wonderful. And tomorrow is fantastic. You know, it kind of gets a little bit better. I can't remember who's responsible for tomorrow, but you're going to have fun. And I just want to thank you, you know, Doug, for what you've done to create this space for all of us and bring us all together, and the quality of your enthusiasm and wisdom. And thank you for wandering around Jokoji, getting enlightened all the time. Thank you. I don't know. I think we're about ready to wrap up. And Doug, you're the one that's the head priest on this, so I'll let you wrap it up. So thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me today, Trout. This is fun again, and look forward to the next days. The next chapters 10 and 11 and 12 are I don't know how far we're going to get through them because they're long, but we'll chew on them in the coming days. So let's adjourn for now and reconvene for a little zazen, and your talk at 3:00 Pacific time. So thank you all.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.